This is Fresh Air. When Reuven Frank was hired as a news writer for NBC TV in 1950, he asked the man who interviewed him why he got the job. Frank worked on a newspaper and wondered why NBC TV News couldn't get someone from NBC Radio News. Frank was told no one worth a damn in radio thought TV would last. So Frank managed to get started when TV news was on the rise. He says he got out just before its decline. He went from news writer to producer. He brought Huntley and Brinkley together, creating the Huntley-Brinkley Report. Frank was twice president of NBC News, from 1968 to 73 and from 1982 to 84. Reuven Frank has written a memoir called Out of Thin Air. I asked him why he thought the golden days of network news were over.
I think network news is slowly being phased out. It still has a role to play. It's still doing some important things. But the golden days that you referred to were the days when the three networks had a monopoly of national and world news on television. Monopoly is a nasty word for a lot of good reasons. But at that time, I believe that the American public was better informed than any public anywhere, ever. And with the growth of other sources of news and the advance of technology so that news became more and more accessible at lower and lower prices, the monopoly eroded. And you can get your news in a lot of places now. I'm not sure it's as good as we did, but people my generation always talk like that.
Let me ask you, when you were a vice president at NBC, did you take cable seriously as competition?
The second time I was not a vice president, I was president of the division, of the news division. And we didn't take cable very seriously. We're now talking about 82 to 84.
Yeah.
It was just beginning, and the question always was, is it 24 hours of news or half-hour news 48 times? And that's a question still to be answered. It's a solid, substantial contribution, but it does not have the distinctiveness and style that seems to me that the network news divisions in their best days presented.
Still, though, do you think that you and your colleagues would have done better to take CNN a little more seriously?
Well, I'm not sure what we could have done about it, even if we had.
Uh-huh.
It lived in a different universe. There was nothing we could do about it. One thing that happened is when the new proprietors, General Electric in the case of NBC, Dish in the case of CBS, when they came in, they kept saying, why can't you do things as cheaply as CNN? That's when they started taking it seriously. Luckily, I was out of management by then.
Does CNN do things more cheaply than the networks?
Oh, sure. They pay less, and they get, you see, being on 24 hours a day using the same piece of material over and over, you amortize it much better.
Mm-hmm.
They do very little, although they do some, of stories that require a week, a month, 3 months to develop. That's where the money goes. That and transportation.
Let's get back to the days that you started at NBC News, and we're talking about 1950, and you started as a writer on John Cameron Swayze's Camel News Caravan. So this is back in the days when the sponsor's name was actually a part of the show's title. How do they arrive at that name? I mean, you asked the question in your book, what is a news caravan? This was Camel Cigarettes sponsoring it.
This was Camel Cigarettes, and that was a great coup for NBC. CBS and NBC were both fighting very hard, and NBC won. This is the very early days. And so CBS had Oldsmobile. Olds presents the news with somebody riding a rocket, I seem to remember. The Camel Caravan was a term used by Camel Cigarettes in its radio broadcast and was a band program, as I remember. And when they went into the news business, they loved Camel Caravan, the alliteration so much, that they insisted on using it for news. And there was nothing wrong with it. I'm just not sure it meant anything. But I don't think it detracted any. It was just a little silly that it was the way we lived then when a sponsor, an advertiser, could feel that he owned a program. And I must say for Camel, they never interfered in the news itself. But they did give us a lot of little restrictions that we found annoying.
What kind of restrictions?
Well, the most important one was, with reference to smoking, you could not use a no-smoking sign. Well, that wasn't too serious. You could always cut around that on a piece of film. Then they had a rule that you could not show a live camel, since a camel is a sweet-smelling cigarette and not a foul-smelling beast. And finally, they would not allow you to show anyone smoking a cigar. We're now talking about 1951, say, when the best-known face in the entire world was Winston Churchill, and it always had a cigar in it. And so I made bold to go to people I worked for and said, look, we've got to have some kind of relaxation of this rule. And they were so happy to have gotten the camel business in the first place, which they got before I got there, and so frightened of losing it, they wouldn't do anything. And with great trepidation, they gave me permission, the low man in the pecking order, they gave me permission to go down to the advertising agency and ask for permission to allow to use a picture of Winston Churchill, former prime minister, smoking a cigar. And I went down there and made an appointment, went down to 42nd Street to the William Estey Company, and got to the man in charge of us. And I said, I have to have permission to show Churchill his cigar. I can't throw out all the news stories with Churchill smoking a cigar. He said, okay. But then he said, but nobody else. I said, how about Groucho Marx? He said, no.
Didn't you think that there was something ethically improper about the sponsor of the show having any editorial control of the program?
The fact that they had these quirks were just something you lived with. If you were smart, you kind of worked around it. Everybody works around unbearable bosses at one time or another in his or her career, and this was an unbearable sponsor.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Reuven Frank, the former president of NBC News, and he's written a new memoir called Out of Thin Air. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Reuven Frank is my guest, the former president of NBC News. You describe network news as having been born out of political conventions. How did the political conventions help lay the way for the development of the news?
Well, there are two ways. First of all, the networks really began on the 1st of May, 1948. Commercial network broadcasting, commercial television network broadcasting in the United States began on that day. And 2 months later, the political conventions began in Philadelphia. There were no organizations to handle the coverage of this. They were thrown into it reluctantly. Most of them were radio executives who had been demoted. And they tried to figure out how you cover these things on television. The networks themselves, the coaxial cable ran from Boston to Richmond, Virginia. And all the live coverage was in that one strip. But it made enough of an impact on the kind of opinion-making people who could afford to own television sets in those days, and there weren't many, that it established television as a nonfiction carrier, as a news medium. And then whether you were part of the convention coverage every 4 years or not became very important to your status in the news organization, and coverage of the convention gave the news organization itself status within the network. It kind of grew. It was a snowball rolling down a hill. And for a long time, news was judged more by conventions than by any other thing it did, although as the years went on, it did more and more things. It did more and more regular programs. It covered things like the Kefauver hearings, the McCarthy hearings, space flight, on and on and on, and it gradually expanded. But the central position of conventions was not shaken for a long time. It seems to me long after conventions had any news value whatever.
I suppose I should ask you to tell the story of how you helped come up with the now famous sign-off for the Huntley Brinkley Show, which you used to produce.
The day is October 29th, 1956, a Monday. It was the first day of the Huntley Brinkley Report. previous Friday was the last day for John Cameron Swayze. We had had 1 hour in the studio over the weekend to try and test, in the days of primitive technology, this two-city news program, which had never been tried before. I was the only one of the group doing the program that had worked on a daily television news program before, because I'd worked 3 years or so on the Swayze program. And in this turmoil, the young director came to me at, 5, 10 minutes before airtime and said, how does the program end? And I said, well, he said, well, the program's got to end and nobody's written an ending. So I said, who has the last item? He said, Huntley. So I put a piece of paper in my typewriter, rolled it up, and typed, New York, good night, David. Washington, good night, Chet. New York, and good night for NBC News. And that's the way they read it. And as soon as the program was over, Huntley came to me. Brinkley didn't bring it up until the next day by phone and said, is that how we're going to end? I said, yeah. He said, I hate it. And I said, you do? Why? He said, it makes us sound effeminate.
What?
Both of them. Oh, absolutely. And I said, look, a program must end. The ending should be short. The ending should include both of you. If you can give me a shorter one that includes both of you, I will use it. And I'm still waiting.
Well, maybe you can explain what they found, quote, effeminate about saying goodnight.
I don't know, the fact that they were saying goodnight to each other instead of to the audience. I don't know what it was, but it really bothered them, and bothered a lot of people, made fun of it around the NBC system.
Do they ever start to like it?
They reconciled themselves to its success, I guess is the best way to put it.
Now, do you think of this little sign-off as having, in a way, opened the door onto Happy Talk? Or do you think of it as just having, like, humanized the anchor position a little bit?
Well, I don't know, because that's all after the fact. That's not why I did it. I did it because we had to have an ending. And I didn't like some of the endings. You know, Murrow used to end saying good night and good luck, and then in that below basso voice of his, when he said good luck, the implication was, and you're going to need it. And there was one guy who said, and good night to you and especially you. And I thought that was disgusting for a news program, and it was. You know, everybody has this kind of gimmick ending. Swayze's was glad we could get together, which is all right, except we didn't get together. I gave you the news, and you either listened or you didn't. And so this was generic. It was Chet saying goodnight to David, and David said goodnight to Chet, and then we signed off, and then we were finished, and the program was over, I hope, on time. But later, the research department, which is the people who mess with Nielsen figures, came to me and said, the audience likes the fact that they talk to each other. And I said, but they don't talk to each other. They talk to each other at conventions, but they don't talk to each other on the news. All they do is say goodnight. Well, people think they talk to each other. So it may be that, in all innocence, I and I alone am responsible for Happy Talk and all that gab and people telling each other bad jokes and making fun of the weatherman and all the excrescence that we have come to accept.
I knew I'd get a confession out of you if I pushed hard enough. One last question. I don't know if you really had ulcers or not. As ulcers was always like in the 50s and 60s, that was the disease of stress, you know, the disease that symbolized stress. And so there'd be like, what would bring on the ulcer attack, you know, that kind of crisis? What would really get you going, the type of thing that you'd... That would really bring on the most stress, the biggest headache.
Well. First of all, the job itself was stressful. When I first started, I developed a nervous stomach. I really did.
Oh, so you really did have ulcers?
No, not ulcers. But what it is that, unlike newspapers where I came from, where you do your work and you know your day hits a high point and then it kind of tapers off the way everybody's does.
Yeah.
In broadcasting, you build to the time of broadcasting, and then there's total letdown. And I went to a doctor with this thing, and he said, and he checked and checked and did all those uncomfortable and irritating things that they do. And he said, there's nothing wrong with you. The only advice I've got is quit your job. So I didn't take it. I didn't take the advice. And somehow or other, I adjusted to it.
When your doctor gave you the advice to quit your job, was there a moment where you did think about that seriously?
Oh, no. I have never regretted it. I had a marvelous time. I really did. I was there at the right time. I was there in the right place. I was there when mistakes did not cost so much, so you could try new things. I got in at the right time. I got out at the right time. I've been inordinately lucky.
Well, thank you for sharing some of your story with us.
It is my pleasure.
My guest has been Reuven Frank, former president of NBC News, who's written a new memoir called Out of Thin Air. This is Fresh Air.